As an introduction, I hand over to Brother Paul, please, to speak to us on the subject as it was in the days of Noah.
A very good morning to all of you. So we've just read from Matthew 24, the warning of the Lord Jesus Christ in the first century to be careful, because as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. And if the Lord Jesus Christ is giving a warning about something like this, then we need to pay attention to that warning, try and understand what he's talking about and to see what the implications might be for us. And so we'll look at this subject in a fairly simple way. We'll go and consider the days of Noah, who Noah was. We'll look at what happened as a result of those times in the days of Noah. We'll compare those days to today and try and take some lessons in that way as well, and to see what we can do to avoid similar judgments, because clearly that's the context that Christ is talking about when we read that in Matthew. So we'll go back to the Genesis record then of this character, Noah, and ask first of all, who was he? So we're going to go back right to the beginning of our Bibles, to Genesis and chapter 5. And in the end of Genesis chapter 5, we are introduced to this man. So in Genesis chapter 5 and verse 28, we read the following. Lamech lived 182 years and begat a son and called his name Noah, saying, "This same shall comfort us concerning our work and toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord hath cursed." And Lamech lived after he begat Noah 595 years and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died. And Noah was 500 years old. And Noah begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. They were the three sons that Noah then had. And if we look at the genealogies in Genesis, we can see that Noah was born about 1,000 years after Adam was around. But because of the length that people live for, the length of life, actually he was the ninth generation after Adam, and he was very nearly contemporary with Adam himself. They were very, very close to actually living together. And his name means rest, which I think is a lovely meaning of the name that was given to him because of what happens in the account. We probably know already that we're going to read in a few verses time there about a time of destruction, but following that time of destruction comes rest, and God isn't going to forget the faith of this one man. Well, we've said that Noah was born about 1,000 years after Adam, and what we see then is 1,000 years of man's wickedness on earth. 1,000 years of what mankind might consider progress in terms of science and technology and entertainment and so on. And when we come to the next verse in the Genesis record, which is verse 1 of chapter 6, we're told that men began to multiply on the face of the earth. Now, when you look kind of logically at how many men might have been upon the face of the earth, owing to the genealogies, owing to the length of time that people tended to live for, it is thought that there may have been between 700 million and 2 billion people who lived upon the face of the earth. Now, we compare that to now, there are about 7.5 billion on the planet today. But you only have to go back to 1927 to a time when there were 2 billion people on the earth. We might read this record in Genesis and think, oh, it's so long ago, things were so different. There were a few dozen people walking around, but that probably wasn't the case. They were probably a very developed and civilized group of people. They had more time to develop their ideas. Perhaps we can imagine some of the great brains of today. If they didn't die when they were 70 or 80, but they lived almost perhaps 10 times as long as that, think about what could be achieved, we say in inverted commas. The earth was wicked. The earth wasn't used, and that length of life wasn't used particularly for good. And so we read in verse 4, there were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, they bare children to them. The same became mighty men, which were of old, men of renown. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Verse 9, though. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations. And Noah walked with God. And Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So we're told, without doubt, that the earth was full of wickedness and evil. But in spite of that, there was a faithful man, this man Noah, and his wife, and then his three sons. And they had faith, and they didn't decline to the same standards as the rest of the world's population around them. But it's clear from the words that we're being told here that the whole world was filled with a lack of religion, a lack of acknowledgement of God, and how familiar that sounds to us today. And so in verse 7, God determines that I will destroy man whom I've created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. So God is going to destroy the earth. And yet there was this faithful family, Noah and his family. So verse 14, God speaks to Noah and he says, make thee an ark of gopher wood. Rooms shalt thou make in the ark, and shalt pitch it within and without with pitch. And this is the fashion which thou shalt make of it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, the breadth 50 cubits, the height of it 30. A window shalt thou make in the ark, and in a cubit shalt thou finish it above, and the door of the ark shalt thou set in the side thereof, with lower, second, and third stories shalt thou make it. And behold, I, even I, do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die. This ark, this boat, was to be constructed, which was going to be 450 feet or 135 meters in length, 75 feet or 22 and a half meters wide, and it was going to be three stories and therefore a height of 45 feet or 13 and a half meters. And why? Why would a man build a boat? If we come back a few pages to Genesis chapter 2, when we read this verse here, it seems like a very strange thing to be doing, to be building a boat in land. Genesis 2 verse 5, this is the record of creation, of course, when God has just created the heavens and the earth. And it says in verse 5 of chapter 2, every plant of the field before it was in the earth, and every herb of the field before it grew, the Lord God had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was not a man to till the ground, but there went up a mist from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground. And what it seems we're being told there is that there was no rainfall like we are used to in our country, in our world today. And we expect the rain to come and to water the crops and the crops to grow. But that didn't seem to happen from the beginning. It seemed that there was a mist that watered the ground, that gave the plants and vegetation what it needed. So why therefore build an ark? It would seem a very, very strange thing to do. Well, yes, it was, because there had been no rain, and yet God had told Noah that he was going to destroy the earth, that there would be this rainfall that would come. And Noah is commended for this. If you keep a finger there in Genesis, and we're going to go over to Hebrews in chapter 11, because Noah gives to us an example of faith. In Hebrews chapter 11, we have a list of faithful characters from the Bible, and a very brief description of what they did that made them faithful. And in terms of faith, we're talking about people listening and believing in things that they hadn't necessarily seen direct evidence of previously. And Noah is listed with a few of these characters as being a character of faith. Because when we come to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, we have verse 6 as an introduction, first of all. It says, without faith, it's impossible to please God. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. By faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, like rainfall, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. He devoted a huge proportion of his life to constructing this ark in faith, believing that God would deliver on the things that he had spoken to him. Now, can you imagine, as this man is building a boat inland, what the locals would have thought? They would have thought he was absolutely mad. He's spending these years, year upon year, building this huge boat, and it would seem like a completely illogical thing to do. And no doubt no one would have told them, I've been instructed by God to build this ark because the wickedness is so great, he's going to destroy the earth. Now listen to this and respond to it. I'm sure he would have said that. But they didn't listen. He would have been considered, I'm sure, as a tourist attraction. Have you seen that man a few miles down the road? He's building this huge boat. They would have looked on and they would have just carried on with their everyday lives. And after a while, they probably just overlooked him completely, just thought he was mad. Well, we know from the record in the Bible, which we believe, that the flood came. And the flood came and the earth was filled with this water. Now, we know that there are scientific ways that people date the earth to try and explain away the years. But when we consider that fossils have been found on the highest of mountains, there doesn't seem to be any kind of explanation for this, unless you consider that the earth was full of water at this particular stage. When you consider that the earth, if it was covered in water, there would be huge pressure on the rocks underneath that would have changed the way that we really need to consider how the rocks have been dated. There was a great dramatic change to the landscape that happened at this time. We might think it was just a bit of rainfall that came, and the rain kept coming, and perhaps there were a few thunderstorms. It was nothing like that. If you come back with me to Genesis chapter 7, we should read this account of it actually happening. But it wasn't just the rainfall. It wasn't just water falling out of the sky that was happening. It was huge destruction on a scale that has never been known since upon the whole of the ground. Genesis chapter 7 and verse 11. So 100 years after Noah commences building of the ark, in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened, and the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. And these things happened to the planet. The waters came down, but there was, I think we're being told, a huge volcanic and seismic activity under the earth. Huge volcanoes erupting that would change the landscape of the planet forever after the water subsided. And when you've got that volcanic activity happening, you've got the earth, the atmosphere filled with ash. And that in turn creates huge storms. It changes climates when you have that sort of volcanic activity going on. The steam, the ash clouds, everything that's going on has changed everything for good. It was a time of tremendous destruction, as God had promised. Well, all the animals that were going to be saved were in the ark. Noah was in the ark with his family. The door was shut, and by faith, he was saved. And after a while, in Genesis chapter 8, verse 1, we read that God remembered Noah and every living thing and all the cattle that was with him in the ark. And God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters assuaged, and the fountains also of the deep, and the windows of heaven were stopped, and the rain from heaven was restrained. And in verse 4, we read that the ark rested in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, upon the mountains of Ararat. And that almost says that the ark Noah'd. We said that Noah means rest, and there's a little play on his name there, that the ark rested, the ark Noah'd, and God remembered him. And what we then have is the beginning of a new era, a new time of man's history, a time when the only people that were saved were faithful. It was a time of a new beginning where they could start afresh. The faithful people had been saved. Well, we're going to go now, please, to Luke chapter 17. Luke 17 in the New Testament is the parallel record of what we had read for our introductory reading in Matthew chapter 24, was it? 24. Yeah, Luke 17. Because in Luke 17, we're given a second example. That if we've not learned from that first example of Noah and the fact that the whole earth was destroyed, God gives to us a second example. Luke chapter 17, verse 26. It says, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, this is the rest of the population, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise also, as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded. But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. And so we have this second example, an example that talks about the normality of life right up to the time of sudden destruction, that everybody looked on, ignored the warning signs, and just carried on until it was then too late for them. They were completely oblivious to the message from God. Now, Sodom that is spoken about there in verses 28 and 29 of Luke 17 that Jesus goes on to speak about was a place of great immorality that we read about in Genesis as well. We read about it in Genesis chapter 18, and I think for time we shan't turn there. You're welcome to turn there if you want to, but we'll try and paraphrase what's going on in that record. Well, in Genesis chapter 18, we have this time where Lot, who is the nephew of Abram, has separated from Abram and decided to go towards a fertile area, the area that was towards Sodom. He decided that was the place where he wanted to be, where there would be enough place, there would be enough space for him and his cattle and his farmers and his family to reside. But it turns out that this city that he went towards, and it seems he got drawn into a little bit as well, was a place, as we said, of great immorality. And so Abraham is told that God is going to destroy this city. So very similar things that we read about there with Noah. And what happens then is Abraham speaks to God and God and says to God, well, if there are a few righteous people, could you just save the city for them? And it starts with quite a large number. There's 50 people in the city. And Abraham sort of slowly brings it down in almost a humorous a bit of negotiation that he has with God. And if there's 10 found there, and God says, oh, okay, I won't destroy it if there are 10 faithful people in that city. And it turned out there weren't, which I guess was a surprise to Abraham. There were not 10 faithful people to be found in that city. And so the city was to be destroyed. And in chapter 19, the angels go and they visit Lot and his family, and they attempt to draw them out of the city. Which in itself reads as a fascinating story of what happens there. But Lot is taken out of the city and the city is completely destroyed. Again, sudden destruction has come upon this city. Everybody continued with their normal lives right up to the minute that it was destroyed. Nobody else wanted to listen. Again, I'm sure they would have been spoken to about the destruction that would have come upon them. The way to behave, the way to follow God, but destruction was going to come upon them. And in verse 24 of Genesis 19, we read, the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven, and he overthrew those cities and all the plains and all the inhabitants of the cities and that which grew upon the ground. And so Lot was taken out of the city. And sadly, in the next verse, we read that his wife looked back from behind him and she became a pillar of salt. Because whilst the city was immoral, it was a good, fun place to live, a place that was entertaining, and a place that she actually missed a little bit when she came out. And that was a very dangerous position for her and Lot to have his family in, wasn't it? And she was destroyed for that looking back and longing to go back to that city that had been destroyed that she's grown up in and got so used to. So in both the account of Noah and the flood and Lot and Sodom and its destruction, we have a small handful of faithful people who were saved. And upon the rest comes sudden destruction. Everybody else continued with their normal lives as if nothing was about to happen. And then it turned out that it did, and destruction came upon them. Now, can we try and think of this in a more modern day context? If we go back just 20 years, we come to 9/11. But on that morning of 9/11, everybody got up like normal. It was a normal day. By the end of the day, the world had completely changed. And that was just because of one thing that happened in and around one city in a foreign country to ours. We perhaps think about the way that super volcanoes have been discovered in more recent years. For example, the one that's under Yellowstone in North America. It's thought that if that huge volcano, that's such a large area, if it were to erupt, and there's no reason really why it shouldn't erupt, it's expected that North America would be, first of all, wiped out. But the global temperature would significantly reduce, that a large population of the whole planet would die as a consequence of these things. And that could happen straight away. It could happen immediately. I'm using that as an example, not because we necessarily think that the Bible tells us that will happen, but just to try and illustrate the fact that there are things going on that we can see and we can accept. Actually, things can change very, very quickly. And we need to be careful of that. Because Jesus Christ gives us this lesson that life goes on around us. And surely more and more as time goes on, life becomes very busy. And we go about our daily routines. But we need to look out for the signs that are around us, because Jesus is giving us that warning. But just like in Noah's day, and in the things that happened with Lot as well, there will be a small remnant, a small group of faithful people who would be saved out of this trouble. If you come back to Matthew chapter 24, please, that we took for our reading, there's a little parable that's spoken just before Jesus talks about this warning about Noah and Lot. And it's the parable of the fig tree. So Matthew 24, and we'll read those verses, verse 29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. Then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with the great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. Now, learn a parable of a fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, ye know that summer is nigh. So likewise ye, when ye shall see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. So we have this very clear parable given to us that when we get to this time of year for us now, when we get to springtime and the leaves have fallen off the trees in the autumn, we start to see some signs of leaves and vegetation appearing on those bare branches. And we know, don't we, because we see it year after year, that what's going to follow this is that the tree is going to start to grow those leaves and shoots and blossom and flowers. And eventually, hopefully, fruit would appear on those trees as well. It's a very natural lesson that we can observe and we can accept. And Jesus is saying that when you start to see these warning signs, and we've got many warning signs throughout the pages and prophecies that are contained in the Bible, then you need to be ready. You need to be ready for the things that are going to happen. And I think there's a little bit more to it as well. A little bit more of a direct meaning behind this parable. If we were to turn back to passages like the 10th verse of Hosea chapter 9 and others, we would read that the nation of Israel, God's chosen people, are associated with the fig tree. And we have started to see the fig tree take shape and grow and start to create to have some vegetation on its tree. And that is that God's chosen people, Israel, who have been scattered abroad for so long, are now back in their land. And biblical prophecies have been fulfilled. And it's only in the past few decades that that's happened. Israel themselves are a witness to God and his power and his authority, and that he does keep his promises. And this has all happened in relative recent history. They're back in their land after 70 years, and It's an absolute miracle that they have been saved. One of those prophecies, I think it is worth looking at, is Leviticus 26. In Leviticus 26, so right back at the beginning of Scripture, God has spoken to his chosen people. They were special. They were chosen. God had a plan with them. But even from the beginning, they had to be warned that if they were not going to believe, if they were not going to be faithful, they would be scattered. They would be punished. They would not remain in their land. And yet, because they were a special people, God would not break the promises that he had made, and he would restore them to their land. And so we see the fig tree starting to grow and to develop and to see signs of life on that tree that was so bare for so long. Leviticus 26, verse 44. We're jumping in about the punishments to come upon the Jews. Verse 44, and yet for all that, when they be in the land of their enemies, I will not cast them away, neither will I abhor them to utterly destroy them and to break my covenant with them, for I am the Lord their God. But I will, for their sakes, remember the covenant of their ancestors, whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt, in the sight of the heathen, that I might be their God. I am the Lord. And there we go, a prophecy made so many years before that we've seen fulfilled in the past century. The fig tree is starting to grow again. We could also turn, but we won't because of time, to prophecies like Ezekiel chapter 37, where we are told very explicitly that there is a valley of dry bones, and those valley of dry bones represent the nation of Israel. They are as if they are gone, completely destroyed, scorched by the sun. There is no hope. And yet in that parable that Ezekiel sees in that vision, those bones come together, and the muscles and the sinews and the flesh, and finally the breath of life goes into those bodies and they stand up, representing the restoration of the nation of Israel. And so Matthew 24, the teachings of Jesus are clear. When you start to see these things happen, when you start to see the warning signs, judgment is going to come, like with Lot and like with Noah. In verse 36 of Matthew 24, it says, but of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. So we do not know the exact time that these things are going to happen. Noah didn't know the exact time. Lot didn't know the exact time that things were going to happen. They knew things were going to occur, and they had to be ready for that. And we have these lovely indicators. We open our eyes, we look at the main headlines in the news today, and we are convinced that the plans of God are happening. They are being realized before our very eyes, and we are convinced that that things in the world are starting to show us that the end is very, very close to us. In verse 39, it says, they knew not until the flood came and took them all away. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. And they didn't realize, or they didn't acknowledge these things until it was too late. Well, again, if we think about a modern day example for us, we think about COVID hitting 2 years ago. That hit the world and our country very suddenly, didn't it? And the world was not prepared for it. We all know, don't we, how PPE was run out of, and no one knew what to do really to deal with this. And everyone muddled along the best way that they felt they possibly could. But there was that sudden change. They were not prepared. And for many people, it was too late. And we saw, sadly, many fatalities as a result of it. We need to be ready for things to change. We know that the world has changed since the times of COVID. There is great financial impact made that I'm sure we haven't really seen the end of at the moment. We see the war in Ukraine with Russia at the moment as well, perhaps taking advantage of some of the constraints that countries are feeling at the moment. Nations around us are starting to look more inward rather than outward at each other, caring for their own interests. We see civil unrest on streets. We see all sorts of things going on. And we're told in Joel chapter 3 that great judgment was going to come upon all nations. Judgment is going to come upon all nations. Christ is going to return to the earth. There is going to be another new era, just like in the time of Noah, where we can start again with those who are faithful. So the question for us really is, what can we do? Well, we'll come back to Matthew in just a second, but if we can turn, please, to Peter's first letter. In the first letter of Peter, again in the first century, shortly after the time of Christ, this was written. At the end of the third chapter of this first letter. So 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 18. We read that Christ also hath once suffered for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but quickened by the Spirit, by which also he went and preached unto the spirits in prison, which sometime were disobedient, when once the long suffering of God waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was a preparing, wherein few, that is, eight souls were saved by water. The like figure, whereunto even baptism doth also now save us, not the putting away the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience toward God by the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So we're told that just like Noah went into the ark, in the ark, Noah was surrounded by water, water beneath, water above, represented a baptism. We are told that we also, by faith, need to enter into the ark, enter into the waters of baptism to acknowledge our Lord Jesus Christ and the great work that has been done for us, to accept him in faith that God is in control and God has a plan and Christ is coming soon. We need to get into that ark to avoid that great destruction. And so finally, back in Matthew 24, the final lesson for us, the final exhortation that we can take from this passage is in verse 42. We're given very simple instructions. It says, "Watch, therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh." And so we must all watch. We must all be ready. Otherwise, that day will catch us unawares, like a thief, like it did in Noah's day and like it did in Lot's day as well. Thank you.